We spoke for the last 1 month, you know, non-stop, so our voice is not so good today, but we will try.
Alright, thank you all for coming. My name is Peter. This is Cici and Tassos from Athens, Greece, from the Void Network. We're going to be talking about insurrection in Greece. They're two of the editors of this new book about the December 2008 uprising in Greece. We're an image from the future, the Greek revolts of December 2008. Now that book is based largely in interviews with all sorts of different people in Greece, and also translations of communiques and texts and blogs and chronologies. Because one very important point is that there's no singular history of the Greek insurrection, and there's no one central conclusion or one lesson or one perspective. And in fact, in Greek, they don't refer to an anarchist movement or an anarchist struggle; they refer to an anarchist space. So one thing that that we really want to make clear is that they'll be talking about the situation in Greece, about where it came from, about where it's going now, to answer the questions of what are the roots of insurrection, what gives birth to insurrection, and then also what happens when the fires die down. How can they continue to remain alive? How can they continue to conquer ground even after the riots are no longer quite so intense and quite so frequent? All of this is very much rooted in a historical and cultural context, and the Greek rebellion comes out of this history of struggle. However, it's not something that's entirely special, that's entirely specific to Greece either. It's not something that can only happen in certain countries, that only certain cultures can produce rebellion and others not. So to that end, we're also going to, if we have the time, talk about some other experiences in comparison. Cici, for example, has lived 6 years in England, and I live in Barcelona, and these are really interesting situations to add to this sort of continuum of revolt, with Greece at one end, England at the other, of a society that's been largely pacified, in which the methods of social control are very well developed and employed already. And then Barcelona, somewhere in the middle, a place that has been well known for having very strong social struggles and having a culture that supports those social struggles, but then in recent years has been largely pacified, has been modernized, has been democratized at great cost to the level and the intensity of the social struggles. But also we're talking about an anarchist struggle that has identified many of those weaknesses, that has identified many of those changes, and is seeking to reverse those. So, they're from Greece. I've been out of the country for 4 years. I've never been to the West Coast. None of us here can tell you about what to do here, but what we really hope to accomplish is that you come away from this talk not just informed about Greece, but with a lot of new ideas about how to push things forward here, how to encourage rebellions here in this country. So, we're going to share various analyses with you that even though they're rooted in Greece, will hopefully be helpful for other contexts. The way we like to start is by asking folks what questions they have, what they'd like to know, what they don't understand about how this major insurrection was possible in Greece, what's happening to it now, various cultural factors, anything like that. And so if y'all just start shouting out questions, then that way we can get a kind of an idea of where the room's at, and then at a certain point they'll jump in and start trying to synthesize those questions. So please just start shouting out.
How did it spread and start so quickly? Like, it seemed like it started only like an hour or two after he was killed.
How important?
I'd like to know about the action at the port of Astakos, where they stopped a ship from the United States going to Israel to help an attack against Gaza.
I wanted to know how important, what role the info shops or like social centers play.
How can people internationally
be
of help to places
like this? One. Because you have to understand also everything.
Yeah. How can people internationally be of help to places like Greece and Chile, places where things like this are happening?
How can they be of help?
How the other people in other countries, they can be helped from the Greek movement,
yeah,
or from
how
the Greek movement can help. Yeah. How they can help to the Greek movement.
Yeah.
What do you think about what's happening with the economy in Greece now? And how did the insurrection help that occurring?
social movements such as feminism been a part of the insurrection or play a part of the insurrection?
How do you think the social networks in Greece are different from those in other countries?
What do you mean social networks? Like how the people they behave to each other? Are like the families or like... can you analyze a little bit with this that you say it's social networks? Let's just understand what you mean.
Like, for instance, in the United States, anarchist movement has organized itself in like little cliques on social networks and groups. And I was wondering if there's different organization systems over there for how people get active or how they meet other people.
Is the insurrectionary movement just a movement of young people?
Thank you. No. No.
What about the role of the old Communist Party? And actually, there were two Communist parties.
Two more questions up here.
Maybe we start. Is it something very, very, very different?
What's the rebellion about?
This is obvious, you know. It is like to destroy capitalism and representative democracy on this planet, you know. It is the preparation of global civil war. Welcome. Welcome to global civil war, you know.
Yeah. How would you analyze the position of Greece in the world imperialist system? I mean, it's not either in a first world, middle country, or a third world country. How would you analyze it?
Maybe we start from this. You know, like, I keep on saying that the Ελλάδα is the first thing that has been in the last couple of years. I mean, you know, Greece is a crossroad, you know? It's like a place between the East and the West. In a way, like the Greeks, they don't feel so much Westerns, you know? But somehow they have this elitism that that they invented the Western civilization or something like this, you know? And this is very difficult to fight against it, you know? It's like very... It means like an anti-racistic movement and like for the solidarity of immigrants, all this, you know, like an anti-nationalistic movement, you know, it's going on and going on and going on all the time. I mean, even if you forget it for 1 month, then you have problems, you know. But in a way also, this, it helps like also, because it is a crossroad, you know, and because the Greeks, they feel like, not us, you know, like the normal Greeks, you know, the normal people, I mean, okay? I mean, the everyday life people. They feel somehow a separation from the Western civilization because of the influence of the Protestant Puritanism in the Western civilization. You know, they are not so much Puritans, they are not so much behaviorists, they are very direct people, you know, you can say to the other directly what you think about, you know, and it's no problem, you know. It is about, I mean, it is very important, the intention that you have behind your activities. So in this way, it is a quite truthful communication with the people, with the everyday life people. I mean, you can say directly to an old man, you know, what you believe about him, you know, truthful, polite, but not like you have to behave specified, you know, somehow. So in a way, this has some influence into our way that we behave each other, you know. And it is a little bit problematic to us, you know, when we travel in the Western countries. But you have to behave some specifically, you know, not with your hands, you must not speak very loud to people.
I must be a Greek, I didn't know, but...
it is a crossroad. And of course, somehow, you know, there is strong solidarity to the Arabs, strong solidarity to the Iraqi people, you know, strong solidarity to the East Mediterranean people, strong solidarity to the Palestinian people. Like 98%, they express openly their solidarity to the Palestinian people, to the Kurdistani people, and somehow all the people.
The America.
Yeah, it is very, very strong anti-Americanism, you know, like it's 98% anti-Americanism. It's the biggest amount of anti-Americanism in the planet, maybe. Because, you know, like, you understand that... and you understand that the American government is controlling all the world, you know. It's like, and they try to destroy all kinds of differences and all kinds of this homogeneity, you know.
Whoa! Yeah, interesting. Again. May I suggest you project your voice to the rest of the room too?
It's not.
How about sitting in the middle of the stage?
We can see over your head. Film. That's the problem.
Move in the center.
That's fine.
Okay.
So,
it's also important to interject really quickly about the anti-Americanism that throughout the, especially the Mediterranean region, anti-Americanism functions as sort of leftist populism, whereby especially left parties like the communists deflect like a truly anti-colonial critique by just kind of, you know, putting it all in the U.S. That's worth putting out there. That's something that definitely the KKE, the Communist Party in Greece, does.
So I mean, maybe like because they asked, some people asked about the anti-war movement, you know. Maybe we can use this as a chance, you know, to start to speak a little bit how the things was in Greece, you know, the last 10 years at least. You know? In a way, when this movement against the war appeared, like it was a big majority. There were millions of people that they came in the streets. It was like reformists, romantic people, leftists, autonomists, many, many thousands and thousands of students, you know. It was, I mean, it is very important to understand that in Greece, the high school students, they have very strong, how to say, it is a political mentality that is based on practice, you know. I mean, they are used to squat their high schools after 1990. Like, it was a strong student movement that appeared in the 70s, that through this student movement, the anarchists became more popular. Another reason was that the Communist Party also, that it was very strong during the dictatorship, and all these leftists, you know, they were very, very conservative. They didn't like rock music. They thought that it's like imperialistic music, you know. And, I mean, when the dictatorship fall down, that it was like the feeling of freedom, you know, like of the young people, you know. Even though the leftists, they were very, very powerful, they were very, very conservative. Mm-hmm. So many people, you know, they jumped away from the Communist Party just to have free sex, to wander around, to travel, to listen to rock music, you know, like. And it was like an influence of, like, anarcho-freak culture, you know. It was like an anarcho-freak culture. That it worked very strongly inside the universities, and like with sticks and punching the leftists, they gain some respect, you know, because, you know, in Greece we have this motto that we say, first you're gonna fear of us and then you will respect us, you know. So in this way, you know, like they succeeded to expand slowly inside the university and to the society, but in the way, in that days, it was like a little bit anti-social movement, in the way that, they didn't like the normal people, you know, it was like a self-identity movement in a way, it was anti-social. During the 80s, it became stronger and stronger, bigger and bigger. In 17, like they started to make student organizations, small student organizations. This organization, the target, it goes first to break the student identity inside the university, like to make the students understand that very soon they will be workers, so there is no separation to the other society, okay? I mean, there is not a specific student identity or something. But also, another reason was to break the monopoly of the authority of the elite, of the academic elite inside the university. Okay? And another reason for the creation of small groups, it was like maybe 10, 15 people in the beginning. Okay? The most important it is to invite all the society to conquer the university. As much as possible. Like, people from the public space to organize assemblies inside the university. People that they have problems and they want to organize their struggle, to organize it inside the university. The people to feel that the university is a public space that belongs to everybody. The university is like a square. Mm-hmm. So I mean, even a group of 10 people, 15 people, 20 people, you know, inside the university, they have so big alliances outside of the university that the university president and the regime inside the university cannot break them down. Because just in one moment, these 15 people, there are 300 of them. So all the other 300, they say to the president, what is the problem? You know, and then the university feels, you know, this political existence inside the universities, and this expanded also to the society. In the 1980s, they succeeded first time to occupy the universities of all the country, you know, of all Greece. And in 85, I've made very big riots during the assassination of Michalis Kaltezas, that was the radicalization of my generation, you know, the assassination of Michalis Kaltezas during riots of 17th of November anniversary demonstration, that every year is making riots, you know, every year is happening riots during this demonstration. In 1985, the police assassinated during these riots one young boy, 16 years old boy, and this was the radicalization of our generation. You have to understand also that many times during demonstrations in the 60s, in the 70s, and in the 80s, the police assassinated people, and this followed with very, very, very big riots. These riots that you see now, it was not the first riots that happened for a 15 years old boy assassinated by the police. And the police knows this, and that's why they don't kill us so much. So, you know, this is the political power. Okay, so during the 90s, it was in 1990 very strong occupation of all the universities of the country, but it was the first time that the high school students occupied their own schools. I mean, I say this because here is a place that that slowly appears a very, very important student struggle. You know, and I have to just root our struggle inside this university to explain to you how important it is the work inside the university. And also, like in 95 again, all universities, all schools. In 2000, again, 2003, this is against privatization and for the political power inside the university. And also, of course, for these people to exist, you know.
For example, sometimes the students that they occupy their high schools, maybe they don't have even demand.
At all.
You know, it is not important to have demands. Just you occupy the place and use it as you like.
Yeah, and also even if you have demands, for sure these demands, they have to be connected to the demands of all your society, yes. As you feel it, you know. I mean, it's like the society to feel benefited from your occupation. It's not like a student movement.
And like we said, so like this, you smash the identity of being a student, a revolutionary student. Because the thing is not to be a revolutionary student, but to be a revolutionary being. To be a revolutionary being means that you invite all the rest of the society, but you take care not only of the student struggle, but also about all the other struggles. And also, not just you care about the other struggles, but you invite people to come and do their things in your space.
To use the public
because
space of the university.
The space is not no one's, even the students. The public space, even the university space, doesn't belong to the university academic society, but doesn't belong even to the students. Belongs to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So yes, you can understand that the movement against the war, it was very much influenced from all this way of thinking, you know, that all this thing comes together. And also, one important thing it is that For the Greek anarchists, for sure the anti-war movement, these huge anti-war demonstrations, they had to turn into riots. Because, I mean, all the Greek anarchists, they knew from many, many weeks before these big demonstrations, you know, that this movement will not stop the war. Okay, it was obvious that they will make the war. I mean, there was not any hope that the American government will stop this war because of these demonstrations. But the people, they had the feeling that anyway we have to attack against them.
And it's an excuse also to delay the normality of the everyday life people.
To break the normality.
And it's also an excuse and an opportunity.
A reason.
Yeah, a reason to exist in the center of the city, you know.
But it was like these demonstrations, of course it was riots, and of course it was important, and it was, of course it was an important moment of communication of all different kinds of generations, because of this that you ask, you know, about the generations, you know, for the Greek anarchists it's very, very, very important, you know, to do not be youth movement, you know, to communicate with as more as possible different people from us, different ages from us, in our assemblies to have a different kind of people, different ages, different like immigrants, older people, young people, very, very young people together with like middle-aged people.
People that listen punk, people that listen
hip-hop, you know.
People that listen opera.
These people that listen opera, you know.
Yeah.
Like outside of the subculture, you know. And also, we try to not be like an avant-gardism, We try to not be like an ideology that we, like an ideological box that we will try to put all the reality inside this box, you know. Because all the universe cannot come inside an ideology, you know, a dogma. It is very much undogmatic. Like each group, each small group believes something, you know, but we are not in a debate of ideas. Maybe sometimes we are in a debate of practices, you know. I mean, maybe we believe that this practice is more beneficial, maybe this practice is not good for this specific time. There's no moralism of like, these practices are good, these practices are not good. But we try as much as possible to do not be avant-garde. Like to do not have this attitude that we will teach to the society what is the good thing for them. I mean, we try to make social bridges, to communicate, to understand what these people they believe, and to see, according to our ideas, how we can communicate with these people, you know. And this started, you know, more and more and more after 1995, this big movement of 1990, the end of privatization of education in Greece forever, you know. That was like unbelievable connection of all the different kinds of generations. And also the anti-war movement, it goes something like this, because like old people and young people and like all kinds of people, they came in the streets.
Because, this that he says about the avant-gardism, it said that we will not like to be a revolutionarist elite, because the thing is that we are not the smarter people of this planet, and just we understand that the capitalism doesn't work. There are many thousands of people that they understand, millions of people that they understand also that the capitalism destroys, for example,
the planet. Or destroys our lives.
But the point is to find out these people, to make an open invitation to these people, and don't wait in our small communities, in our small social centers, in our squads for them to come. Or for them to buy our book. The thing is to go and show, for example, this book, or show what is the problem. Because there are some people that they are waiting and they are searching, you know. The thing is that there are millions of people that they have the same curiosity and the same keen desire to know as we have also. So the thing is to try to find these people, or at least to make an opportunity for them to find us, you know.
Yeah, so this is like when we speak about the public space, the importance of the public space in Greek anarchist movement, it is unbelievably important, you know. Because, you know, the public space, it is this empty space that the people they meet, you know. It is the point that it is this place that all the desires come together, okay. And also, like, in every different town or every different city you go in Greece, there is existing crossroads, specific, just crossroads, just a street, you know, just a crossroad that the anarchists, they meet there, you know. And especially the young people, that they have more time to stay outside the houses, you know, and they have more free time, they try to have as more visibility in the streets as possible, you know. And also, like, the occupation of the universities, or the occupation of public spaces, the occupation of parks for to make events and concerts, you know, it is crucial, it is very, very important. Because this makes the government feel that there are thousands and thousands of people that they don't believe on them, you know. Because, you know, this that we recognized in America during our tour, it was that mainly, you know, like, we met small groups of people, even after invitation, even after some mobilizing, there were like small groups of people. So these small groups, they don't feel the power of their own crowd, you know. Somehow, you know, in Greece we try to bring circumstances like demonstrations, or like occupations of parks, or like occupations of public space, or free concerts. We try to create some conditions of crowd, of our own people, like all people that they communicate each other, all the radical people, you know, all the people with some critical mind to meet.
And this is we connect this to the elitism again, the thing for not being a revolutionary elite and to communicate is that you don't only work with the things that identify you. This means that you don't work only with the subjects that you know, for example, repression, feminism, sexism. You don't only work with these things, but you try to inject your perception of your ideas, of your visions, of your culture, you know, into the society. For example, sometimes in Greece, the anarchists participated in many networked assemblies, you know.
Networked assembly, communal assembly.
That they are not anarchists, but they are going there because they don't want to leave this assembly to work as reformists, for example, in a subject of their neighborhood. Maybe, for example, there is a park and they want to destroy, you know, the council. So there is a neighborhood assembly. The anarchists go there and try with them to participate to them to avoid the destruction of the park, for example. Μην μιλάτε, μην προσπάθει προσοχή μου.
It may also be worth going into the story of the creation of one of the first neighborhood assemblies in Greece, just to understand that this is not something that's just always been in the culture there or that fell down from the sky, because there was substantial anarchist influence in the first, in the creation of the neighborhood assembly in Exarchia, which was maybe the second one to be created. And this was during the gentrification in Athens leading up to the Olympics. And
what year? What year?
2003. That they were preparing the city for the Olympics.
And basically Exarchia Square is a really big symbol of Exarchia itself. It's one of the places where lots of different counterculture or libertarian people come to hang out. And right in the middle of the square especially, it's like the anarcho-punks. And then one day all of a sudden there was construction fencing put up around it, and they started excavating and making a big hole. And so a number of anarchists, they went there and they started to ask, you know, they asked the construction workers, who's in charge here? And they found the chief of construction, the company boss. And they went up to him and they're like, what's going on here? What's the plan? And he's like, oh, well, we're going to renovate the park for the Olympics to make it nice, to make it pretty. We're going to take out this old statue with all the graffiti on it and put in a nice fountain. And the statue, it's like the symbol of the park. We're going to take out these old benches. And so there wasn't going to be any place for the old people to come and sit. And the folks of the neighborhood, not in any centralized way, but all the anarchists who lived there, who hung out there, and also just other neighbors, they started talking here and talking there and organizing things. And they said, to the head of the construction company, well, that's actually not going to happen. But, you know, you just wait right there. And they gathered a large group of people and then destroyed the construction equipment.
The people, they felt good.
And it felt very,
the people in the neighborhood, they felt good. You know, they felt empowered. They say, yes, these young people, they came, they smashed all the machines, you know, good, you know. We are winning.
And so they brought the police to guard the square, to guard the construction. But every time the police left, the machines got smashed again. And in the meantime, the neighborhood started meeting, and they drafted their own plans for how they wanted the square to be renovated. And they said to the construction company, look, this is what you're going to do. You're going to add in more green space, more trees, and put in nice new benches, and this fountain crap is not going to fly. And they kept pushing this until that's what happened. And the city was forced to renovate Exarchia Square in this line, and then the Exarchia Neighborhood Assembly, because it used these very direct tactics, because it accomplished something, and because it brought people together, and was able to allow for lots of different perspectives rather than trying to come to one central decision, it stuck around and it still exists today. And there's also the punk.
Yeah.
In fact, after December, and this is a story that really illustrates how the insurrection continues to grow after people went home from the rioting, in March of 2009, so just over a year ago, the Neighborhood Assembly of Exarchia met and decided to take over a spot that for a long time the city government had said they were going to turn into a park, but they didn't have the money, they didn't have the funds, it was impossible, and they wanted it to be a parking lot.
They rented for 15 years to become parking, you know, and it was the week that the contract of the 15 years that it was a parking, it had to finish and to rearrange the new contract for the next 15 years to exist parking there, you know, to continue to be parking area.
So one morning the neighborhood assembly brought together 1,000 people. They took down the fences. They came with jackhammers. They destroyed
all the cement.
They ripped up the asphalt. They had ordered trees. They brought in trees. And from the morning to the afternoon, in less than a day, it was a park. After 15 years of the city government saying this wasn't possible.
Yeah, and they made a photograph, you know, and they sent to the government. This is the park. Now we have the park, you know.
And there were so many people there that the police couldn't stop that. They continued to defend it. They also continued to work on it and make it the best fucking park in Athens, to make it a really beautiful space, put in tile mosaic walkways, make their own benches. They were learning how to make their own bricks so they could make like this little spiral thing for the kids to crawl around in this playground, and they were making their own goddamn bricks, right? And it was just kept planting trees and flowers and all these things at the same time as it was being used as a space for meetings, for
solidarity events,
for concerts, for film showings, all these things, bringing in people.
Into the radical ideas.
It was a place to hang out constantly, and this has even more power because this was half a block away from where Alexis Grigoropoulos got killed. And so they were basically, so because Greece and the universities, they have asylum, and this was mandated into law, but that's not what gave it reality, that's not what gave it substance. It's the fact that people took it, they seized it, they defended it, and they're expanding that asylum and creating more autonomous spaces throughout this area, more police-free zones, that when the police go in there, they have to go in as an invading army because they're not allowed to do normal day-to-day policing in those spaces. And in this park, it was so amazing that in even a week after, like people who clearly lived in the neighborhood their entire lives, they'd be walking by and then they'd look up and they'd start checking out the street signs because they were lost in their own neighborhood. And that's the degree to which it's been transformed and that's been fought for and that's been held and that's still there today.
And another thing that was important during this period of all these struggles about the public space, it was that we had to learn ourselves to communicate and explain our strategy or our ideas to different people, you know, and also to make them understand that our power, it is beneficial for their own struggle, that we don't just hijack their struggle, you know, we just use their own struggle to make our smashings, you know, but to understand the people, yeah, but that this is very useful also sometimes, you know, if the demonstration it is like bullshit, like completely reformist or liberal, of course you hijack and you explode the demonstration. Not all the times, it has to do, it is a strategy, like if it is politically, you know, powerful, of course you do it, you know, or if it is like, it has to do according to the political conditions of the country, you know, I cannot speak into American way, you know, like how to do this and when, you know, but the important thing it is, like through all this counter-information, thousands and thousands of pamphlets and communiques, the using of offset machine, you know, no photocopy, no digital copy, you know, like no digital printing. Offset machine, the big offset machine that you print thousands and thousands of communiques. Even if all the small groups, they have their own printing company that they are friends and they like, you know, and they print their offset, you know, the old typography. And so when you distribute thousands and thousands of flyers of your ideas, and when face to face you go to the assemblies of the people or to the communities or even to the syndicalist unions, you know, and you impose your logic day after day, you know, and you learn to communicate with people that you don't like, but you make them like your ideas, or at least to show respect to your ideas and your practices, then it is of course that you have the power, of course, to destroy the machines and the people to feel benefited from this. Because, you know, it was a long talk, very long talk, very polite, the anarchist people, you know, to explain to the old people, to the older people of the neighborhood, you know, why we have to destroy the machines. That if we don't destroy the machines, nobody will care for your idea. Nobody will care for us. If we don't attack, nobody believes that we really believe this thing. Because when we attack, we put our body on this thing. We risk our life for this. And this turns, you know, our ideas into materialize our ideas. Attack, materialize our ideas.
Our ideas are not something abstract, like they take a real form when we participate in something. And also all the society accept this and sometimes adopt these anarchist practices because at least all the anarchists, there is a revolutionary commitment, a devotion to the vital cause that made us anarchists. So it is not a teenager phenomenon that we will get bored after some years old. We devote to this revolutionary cause that made us to fight against capitalism and against any forms of domination.
And like in this way, like we say that the body arises in three moments. Okay, the body arises in counter information because the people, they have a face. You know, behind these communiques, it is not like a click, click, click in the internet, you know. Like it's just, I send 200 emails and I'm enough anarchist for today, you know. It is not like this, you know. It is like the people, they go every afternoon, you know, speaking, going to the universities, maybe sticking posters in their own square, you know. And even if they cannot stick posters because the circumstances is difficult, you know, to stick posters or maybe danger, they go in all the places. They meet the people in the tavernas, in the restaurants, in the university, in the streets, you know. They stand in the streets. street. They go around in the street and they feel who is the possible comrade, you know, who is the person that has some arising of his critical mind, you know, and we just communicate with them. It is not that we will show them the truth or something. It is that we communicate our existence with them, and this makes us more and more and more, because the isolated people, the people that they feel the fear to attack, they come near to the anarchist space. And they find their own way to communicate, their own group that they like, you know, their own people that they like their practices, and they participate, you know. But it is a work of all of us, you know, of all the people, each small group, to find as possible as more thousands of people, and to have as more as possible influence. So the body arises in the counter-information. The body then arises in the demonstration. Okay, the moment of the demonstration, it is the moment of the bodies, you know, like with helmets and sticks, you know, and to protect the dignity of your group, even if the police, it is much more powerful from us, we will attack to them,
yes.
You know, because when the police comes closer to us, it has to feel the fear that we don't scare. You know, and in this way we protect our dignity. And month after month after month after month, they cannot massacre. Because if they massacre, the people they will understand that they live in a regime worse than Iran. You know, even in Iran, the people they can gather in the universities and making demonstrations. You know, in the United States of America, the people they cannot gather. You know, this is fucked up. You know?
I mean,
you may the people in New York, they made the occupation of the university. There were 20 people just closed the door of the university, and they came 200 police cars. 200 police cars for 20 people just staying behind the door.
So
you know, in Iran there was 20,000 people the same day demonstrating, and no police there.
Yeah. So because you know, we live in a ghost totalitarianism. That means that it is very difficult for many people to understand that the state that we live is approximately totalitarianism. And so I think my personal personal opinion is that we need more tools than ever historically in this in the planet, because is this ghost totalitarianism that the people they don't feel that this is injustice. They don't know that
this suppression.
They think that they are free, you know, because of course it is free to read anarchist books. Of course it is free to have in the media sometimes, because sometimes it's free. Yeah. But of course it is free to have Facebook with many pictures of riots. Okay. But
it's not put in practice.
Not,
to put in practice,
yes.
It is not free.
You understand?
So you cannot put in practice.
Yes.
Your
so we have. I think that we have to focus and. It's a given basis.
To make specified.
No, to specify. We have to specify the moments that this totalitarianism appears.
Clear.
And when to have this clear to ourselves, and after to spread this to the rest of the society, because this is the point to make clear what is going on here.
So the body arises in the demonstration, and the body arises to the riot, because riot is the moment that everything that was hidden until now, then it appears openly, you know. It appears open. All the limitations of the fear, all these moments that you were feeling suppressed, you know, all this misery of your life, you know, appears during the riot, you know. The riot is the moment, it is like the self-explosion of the body, you know. It is the moment that the body is not under control anymore, you know, that there is not existing any fear. And that's why, you know, like the anarchist groups, most of the times, when they do riots, you know, they don't come in the street like a separate block. This is not the day for separate block. We make many times separate block just to show our political existence, and this is not riot this day. We distribute thousands and thousands of pamphlets, all the small groups, we gather in assemblies, we speak about the specific problem, and then we go back to our small groups and we distribute different propaganda, each group, about their own beliefs for this specific day of the political demonstration. This is the way that the people, the anarchist groups, they organize political demonstration. They gather, they meet, they speak about the problems, different opinions. They don't like each other, the people. They just meet to share their own intelligence. They say, we don't debate the ideas. We don't try to find the final truth. It is not dogmatic, you know. It is just we meet and we share our ideas, our perceptions. Okay? And then each group going back and says, making this flyer, distributing 5,000 copies, and then you say down, meeting of the demonstration, this hour, that day, in that specific place. So they come 50 different flyers for the same day of the demonstration, all of them anarchists. So all the people, they realize that this is like a space, a political space, you know. They can confront these people, all the universe, all the political spectrum, you know. And in this way, when the anarchists, they do this demonstration, they don't attack, you know. They don't make smashings. It is the day of the political demonstration. But when it is social problems, when it is social fight, when the liberals, they have demonstration, or the leftists, or like this, the people, they just spread inside the demonstration, invisible. This is the illegal invisible, you know. With normal clothes and very nice, you know, very nice girls and boys, you know. And in the specific moment, they self-explode, you know. And when they self-explode, the police freak out completely because they believe, they feel that all the demonstration attacked to them. You know, it is not, where is these people came from, you know? The known unknowns, you know. Everybody knows them, but nobody knows who they are, you know. They are the young people, the old people, the people that they feel afraid, and they were not feeling afraid anymore. It is the people that they were feeling suppressed, and they don't feel suppressed anymore. The people that they were miserable, but they broke down their misery, you know. It is the moment of the riot, the moment of end of any kind of limitation, any kind of fear, you know.
But also this is not only in a riot, because the attack is not only to throw Molotovs or swear to the police. The attack is also the counter information. The attack, the most important attack is to be there and exist. The most important attack is to drop out our fear. Our fear to be beat up by the police, but not victimizing ourselves in the hands of the repression. To drop out the fear of being prison, because it is important to understand that in Greece, at least it is important that we feel that every time we are going to have solidarity from our comrades, even if we don't know them personally. And third, it is important to drop out all the misery of our everyday life. And how we can drop out the misery of our everyday life? We construct and we build up atmospheres that we would like to live there. And also, not by ourselves, we try to find all our unknown friends to construct together these atmospheres, you know. Because, and this is not utopia. The utopia is just here, 2 meters, you know. The thing is to make it in practice right now and here. And don't leave the other society to believe that all the anarchist ideas are utopian. Utopian is not something, it's not a fantasy. Utopia is something that goes over the limit of the reality. Of the, πώς το λέμε το σέχι.
Of the things as they are, you know.
And, τι θέλω να πω. Μην το κάνεις. So it is important. So the top. Μην το φάνεις αυτό, δεν μπορώ να μιλήσω. Συνέχισε.
How long we have? How many hours we have to speak more? We have to know this thing. 30 minutes. Okay. So let's see the question. There are some hands. Yes, yes, yes. One moment. Yes.
Oh. Yeah. I was wondering when you said no police spaces and stuff like that.
No what?
Like police-free zones, like. Mm-hmm. I know there is some method of, I'm sure, but with like personal antagonisms, or say somebody does something fucked up to somebody else, like, and one may be stronger, one may be weaker, like, is there a way, like, collectively to sort that out?
First of all, there is no really police free zones. Okay.
This is in our imagination.
This is in our imagination.
It's imaginary. Okay. We create this result with our imagination.
And this is the point.
And the border.
Yeah, and this connects with the utopia. The imagination will be in practice.
Now.
Because if the police will come, we will throw them out. It is not free zone of police.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Well, you understand. I mean, we have imaginary borders. And we control these borders because if the police come closer, the people throw Molotovs to them. And also, like, the places that they... Yeah, and the people that they stand in this area, the every day, all the borders of Exarchia controlled by riot police, big buses and like this.
Like this you talk, for example?
And the people, they meet every night, and they drink beers, and then they put in these bottles their benzene, and they go and they throw them. It's like a very nice night in Exarchia,
But for not making misunderstand, of course this maybe sometimes works very bad, because after the police come and arrest hundreds of people, okay? Mm-hmm. It is not this that, oh yes, let's do it, you know, it's fun.
You have
because
to
of the politics, it's not only fun, you know?
Yeah.
The politics are serious, serious subject, you know? And...
I mean, you have to understand what is the proper moment, what is the proper
yes.
time.
Yeah. In response to your question, there's definitely a sort of collective participation in creating the type of space that they want to, and if something happens that's not okay with someone, then they'll talk about it. Sometimes there will be fights, sometimes they'll physically kick someone out.
Okay.
I mean, for example, yes. you know, sometimes you have folks who come in and sexually harass people, or folks who come in and start stealing from folks, depending on how grave people feel it is, they'll either kick them out or put them in the hospital.
Many times putting in the hospital.
If it's more of a conflict type thing, then you know, then you'll see big like arguments, collective arguments, people talking about.
No, I think no. The most important to understand is that these free police zones make them the social centers there. You know,
yeah.
Because there is a social centers there that the people there are doing work. You know, I mean work. They have film nights, they have lectures nights, they have parties, they
free
have
workshop.
Assemblies. You know, it is an open space there. It is not public, but we make it public, you know? So this is the strong possibility.
That opens the possibility,
this,
you know, and produce the power they are around,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And if there are many of them in the network, because Exarchia has a lot of squads, a lot of
social
centers that this with rent, you know, because if it is a building that you cannot occupy, maybe sometimes you rent also a building, okay? If you are in a town or in a city that you cannot occupy because the police knows who they are, the anarchists of the city, then you rent a building and you make political center. And the more important thing is that in all these places, they offer like free lessons, like so it is welcoming to the society to learn something, the people that they need something to learn something. They are very, very cheap alcohol, so the people to have good fun, you know, and to not be like in clubs and bars and all this.
So, because when you multiply the appearance of you, then you multiply the receivers of your vision, and then you multiply the political power, and then one public space, you can make it a free police area, for example, you know. So the important thing is to multiply your power through social centers, through squads, through parties, through festivals, through events.
And
I also want to throw in something they've referred to the sort of collective force a couple times, and I want to make a contrast with Barcelona to flesh that out a little bit. Barcelona is a city with hundreds of active anarchists, but it is a city in this sense a little bit similar in recent years to the United States anarchist scene, because it's one without, in general, feelings of great collective force. It's very, very fragmented, and the interesting thing is that Greece is also extremely fragmented. The anarchist space is extremely fragmented. People don't, in general, try to coalesce. You know, they'll have their assemblies, but usually they're working in very small groups, and the fragmentation is actually a strategic advantage in terms of avoiding or counteracting police repression. However, the fragmentation in Barcelona functions to deprive people of this sense that they're part of something powerful. And even in a city with hundreds of active anarchists, very few can count on large groups of people to work with, enough people, for example, to take on more aggressive tactics. And I would make a couple distinctions that might explain this lack of the ability to create a collective force there, which fortunately is being reversed a bit. For one thing, there's been the surrender of the public space. So the most anarchists in Barcelona are in the squatting scene, and that's allowed them to create a lot of really amazing autonomous social centers and autonomous networks. However, this has also constituted a surrendering of the public space, a retreat into these closed structures, houses and social centers. And so this helps to foster a sense of isolation. It's a way of giving up your own city. And year after year, you see how powerful the government is to change the city, to commercialize public spaces, and you're not specifically trying to stop that usually, so you feel disempowered, and then you also lose opportunities to connect with other people, because you're not going to bring everyone into the one social center. But if you're on the streets, then you can connect more with people, and you can also have really empowering, enlivening connections with people who aren't anarchists. And then another thing is this sort of general lack within the mentality of being a powerful movement, of being a movement that attacks. And that's fortunately starting to change. But very much of it can't be explained materially or in these structures. A lot of it can be explained just in what mentality people choose to take. Because generally, how making again a generalization, how criticism has worked among the anarchists in Barcelona has been to say, none of this out here is cool enough for us. This is shit, this is shit, this is shit, and this is shit. And that's extremely disempowering. Only when there's been criticism by doing something better have we started to see that get reversed. And I think that that's perhaps something extremely valuable to learn from for U.S. anarchists.
Because
they've essentially chosen to not see themselves as powerful, and this becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I have a comment leading to a question. I got into trouble with a few of my white Marxist friends for noting that the student building occupation in response to the 30-something percent fee increase for California students was, from the photographs I saw, there were very few, if any, black students in that building occupation. And from what I saw, I did not see any, to me, visually identifiable Latino students in that building occupation. So to my perception, although there were some Asian students in that occupation, this was a largely white student occupation of the students who were left to be able to protest. Because we've had previous fee increases that had already weeded out quite a number.
Let him speak.
Some people don't like to hear this.
Yeah.
That already weeded out a number of black and brown students. So not in 15 or 20 years have I seen Berkeley students in any significant numbers protest any of the things that have been sucking money out of public education, like $2 trillion wars, like $6 to $10 billion a year for Israel, like single-payer, protesting for single-payer health plans. So when I see or heard the statements, say the university, even by the unions that one day had ostensibly 5,000, international people like to hear contextual questions. We don't like soundbite questions like Americans do.
Get to it, Joseph.
See, this is the problem here. So when even the unions message was save the university, I thought that's far too limited a vision for me, and I'm not going to take my time just for that vision. So I'm wondering, to me this seems to be a lack of political self-esteem among Americans in general and even Berkeley students, and I'm wondering what sort of observations you might have about American political self-esteem and the fact that only when it affects certain groups of people are they going to say, save us, but not protest the system that's sucking money from us. Yeah.
For us it is very difficult to share some of our observations about American society, because still, it is very, 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 very...
Still we observe,
we don't understand, it is very difficult. Maybe we can say about how we feel, And we feel that there is existing very, very big isolation. I mean, the students, they are isolated from the workers of the university. I mean, it seems that they put, we hear stories and we try to understand, they put in the demands for the workers and they didn't even go to say to them that they were going to make occupation of the university. There is no communication, lack of communication between the races, between the people. Heart-to-heart communication is difficult, the people, they are not open-hearted, But all this, for us, we cannot have an opinion for this, I mean, I can share hours and hours talking with you about all these problems, but we cannot appear in a crowd of people and to say what is our opinion about the university struggle rooted in this place. I mean, we just share some experience about how, and some limited experience also, from how the people doing the student struggle in Greece. And this is it is limited. We said some things about the anti-war struggle in Greece. This person that he asked about the attacks of the communists of the left people. In different places for the anti-war movement, to the ports to stop the war. And all this. And even this, It is like so mixed, so complicated for the Greek logic, you know, inside the Greek society. So I believe that seriously, the American society is very, very complicated. And as I feel, the first thing that the people they have to break it is their isolation, you know, their loneliness, and their separations, you know, the alienation. I mean, I believe that this fight is very, very strong.
Is this going to get worse or better?
What is this?
Is this going to get worse or better?
This country, you mean Greece?
This ability in Greece, this ability to bring imagination to reality. Now that the other side is broken, that's
I believe that for sure it's going to become stronger and stronger. Because, you know, many thousands of young people participated, like high school students, 15 years old people, participated in the struggle, you know.
And also during the revolt, many other people like it, you know, and they want to participate again if this happens. So this arises the amount of the people that they want to be part of their revolt.
Of the attacks, yeah, of the attacks.
Will the rest of the European bourgeoisie try and bring down much heavier repression as the price for bailing out the government?
The repression is now very strong, you know, but we don't believe. Like, we don't victimize ourselves, you know. I mean, the people trying to build power and to build political power and also to build as more power for attack, you know, for like smashings, burnings, arson attacks. This becomes more and more and more well-equipped and very nice organized. But also, like the communication, the bridges with the society. It is like, these are two complementary things, you know, like how you attack and how you communicate the reasons of your attack, you know.
And also we don't get disappointed if some people arrested or if we didn't something good, we continue, you know.
And through the years, the people, they change also.
Yes.
Because if you participate in a struggle for 20 years, 25 years, I mean, the things that you were believing before fade out, you know. And like all your strict beliefs that you are like so powerful, believing in something, this relaxes.
Yeah, it is to evolve your own perceptions.
And you change also perceptions, so this is very, very important. Also young people.
And
also the old people. And the another thing that we try to avoid as much as possible is to be didactic. We don't try to play the teachers to the younger people. I mean, the younger people is the people that they have the power to fight, and they have the reasons to fight also because they feel the desperation of the no future, you know, there's no future for them, you know. And this is the people that are going to make the big fight, you know. We are just there to help or to participate in their own fight.
Do you have any, like, community or movement responses or coping mechanisms for the emotional and psychological repercussions of the kind of struggle and insurrection that you are experiencing in your country?
If they traumatize the people, if the people they are not traumatized.
No, it's not a
lot. Faith in
Jesus. All this that you see, it's a very happy moment, you know? It is a moment of enthusiasm, you know? All your adrenaline comes up, but yes.
Yeah. I want to throw into that, one of the interviews in the book is the interview with the person who filmed the assassination of Alexis Kanagoudopoulos, which was a very traumatic experience, and she talked about, you know, her own personal trauma in witnessing that murder. But and I was actually talking about this with a friend of mine in another city in the States, and she said something really, really intelligent, which is that in order to heal from trauma, you need to feel empowered. And the response, the social response, and also every individual response, not waiting for a social response, but responding individually and expressing that rage, I think allowed that trauma to be healed. So it's not like trauma isn't talked about in some macho way that, you know, trauma is for weak people, but that rather than only talking about it, the focus is put on empowering oneself, on expressing that rage, on taking control of your life and fucking the shit up of those responsible.
For me, it is not a trauma, it is always some cultural shock, you know, that we want to continue. We want to feel strange in this normal world. And we try to make people to feel cozy to these strangers.
And also, like, there is another logo that it says that it was written in the walls, like, that action take out the teardrop.
Action dries your tears.
Yeah, action dries your tears, you know. Because as more as you participate, all the fears and all the trauma and all this panic about all these things, you know, you become more and more and more and more empowered, you know. This. And also the collective participation, like the friendship, you know, friendship is amazingly important, you know, because there is a question about, you know, organizational forms, you know. The main organizational form in Greece, it is friendship.
Yeah.
We believe really, really that friendship will be revolutionary, you know. I mean, very close, very good loving friends to each other, that they like each other, they spend their life together, they trust 100%, they know each other many, many, many years, and then they do actions, you know. I mean, if the people, they don't know each other many, many years, and they don't know what is the background of this person that he and they don't know other people that they met them and they trust, because to trust somebody, you have to trust also all his circle. And then you do some action. If there is no some circumstances like this, don't do any action at all, you know. Because all the other work that you could do in the public, it is also so much important, you know. It is a part of the insurrection. I mean, the insurrectionary groups that they organize these dangerous or strange actions, you know, they need each other to know very, very well, you know. So friendship is the best way, like, to go beyond.
And we try to make our friendship revolutionary. This means that we try to make things with our friends. We try to beat political beams with our friends.
Small cells, hundreds, thousands of them.
I think it comes to the heart of it, this idea of trust and friendship is something intrinsically absent from the American mind. Like, we are so fractured by race and gender and legal versus illegal immigrants. Like, it's such a fucking mess. And I mean, it's even ideologically, like, private property here is God. Like, these are often evoked in the same fucking sentence. Like, when those 200 cops show up to evict 20 student movements, people think that's just. Those people are trespassing. We need cops to come in and shut them out. Like, public parks aren't something that we're missing. Public parks are places where people are uncomfortably confronted with homelessness, with rampant drug addiction, with the aspects of American culture that most obviously schizophrenic and fucked up. And they want them shut at sunset and then police to keep those people out. So then later they can walk their dogs. The American situation here is, like, very different than the solidarity and friendship that.
Yes, but you have, but this that we, that, but this that we say, you know, it is that this that you say, that the condition is different, that the society is different, you know, or that the political context is different. In our belief, it is that the only reason that we exist, it is to break down this political context or to break down this social context, you know. This is the reason that we fight, you know. All these things that we say that, oh, this could never happen because the society is fucked up. We are here to heal, you know. I mean, through our actions, through our solidarity, through our relations, the way that we relate to each other, the way that we put in, our actions in practice, we are here in a way like to heal or to shame.
And to trust our power. Because we have it is time to believe that we can change this situation, wherever we are. Of course, it is completely different from country to country. Absolutely, the context is very different. But for sure, the power of the people to be happy, you know, to be free, it's the same. It is a pulse in our heart, you know, to
dignity.
Be free. It is a matter of dignity to upscale our life and the life of our comrades, you know. It is something here, you feel it, you know. When you see someone to be like, when you see a beggar, you feel like, you know, fuck, you know, to what society we live. When you see your friend to be kicked by the police, you say, what the fuck, man, you know, what is going on? This sentimental pulse in our heart, we have to expand. This we have to expand. We have to materialize our utopian thoughts, but also we have to speak. We have to subjectize it through persons. I don't know if this makes sense in English now. That I'm saying that we have to direct our feelings, you know, and not our. Our theories or our ideas about a problem institution, how to say, I don't
rage
know.
It is the best weapon, you know, like, I mean, when you feel the rage, then you arise. It is not theory, you know, it is not a book.
In America, I think mainstream culture does not feel rage.
This is to expand.
But
the
all these people, they feel a lot of rage now.
There's strong anti-intellectualism in American culture, there's a strong anti-war. To be poor, to be criminal, there's not a sense of solidarity, or that there's like another kind of quality versus quantity life that we keep striving for. Most people want quantity. Given the choice between toaster ovens and big TVs and freedom, people have resoundingly chosen toaster ovens and TVs.
I understand, and you are absolutely right, for sure. But I think that we focus we don't focus on this problem, you know. We focus how to make these people to understand us. You know, it is something contradictory. We don't want the people to understand us, but also we want to find our unknown friends. This is our point, to find the people that they will understand us. If these that they don't understand us,
we will attack them.
You know, it's okay. But the thing is, not focus on the disappointment. Don't focus on the sadness. Don't focus on the misery of the America, you know. We see this America, but... focus how we want to be our place, how we want to be there, you know. And when we focus there, we can think amazing things to do, you know. When we focus on the ecstatic moments of our life, you know, when we focus on the moments that we want to live, you know, then we can imagine amazing things, you know, to make.
To break this problem.
Because one of the most important contradictions is that simultaneous to what you said, there are still millions of people in this country who applaud every time a cop gets killed, and millions of people and millions of people who were laughing when the investment bankers started jumping out of the windows. And that's what we need to focus on.
One moment,
yes,
because you went
so loud.
All ideologies.
But always you have to have behind your mind that maybe you will be in the prison.
Yeah.
Okay? But always for me, okay, always I have back in my mind that maybe I'm going to be in prison. And this
to be prepared, you know.
To be prepared for not get crazy after, you know?
And like the solidarity, okay? After 90s, slowly the anarchist movement in Greece, the anarchist space, like we call, started to realize that, in Greece we don't do solidarity only to the anarchist prisoners, we do solidarity for all prisoners. I mean, we express our solidarity towards all prisoners. Even the crimes, even the rapes, even the worst people of the planet, I don't know, you know, because these are social phenomena. The prisoner, the crime, it is a social phenomenon. So the anarchists, they express a solidarity towards all prisoners. And there is a strong movement, very strong, but it's not movement actually, it's participation. I mean, each anarchist, of course, participate in the solidarity movement. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, because you know, in Greece, we don't have separation of the practices of the groups. Like, me, I am care only for anti-fascism, so I participate in my anti-fascist group and I do only anti-fascism. This doesn't exist, you know. In Greece we say we are not anti-fascist, we are anarchists. And because we are anarchists, we fight against fascism. We are not anti-sexist, you know, because we are anarchists. And because we are anarchists, we fight against sexism. In this way, you know, the people, we are not ecologists. We are anarchists, and because we are anarchists, we fight for the nature, you know. And so in this way, of course, every person participates. Maybe he will go in a concert to offer money. Maybe he will make a campaign with his own group. Every group makes all these campaigns. You understand? Every small group participates also about sexism, also about the ecology, also about social struggle of their area, also about networking, you know. And in this way, also the solidarity movement, it expands. You know, because everybody feels that they have to participate in the solidarity movement. So when the anarchist prisoners, they go inside the prison, And the prisoners, they feel the solidarity of the anarchist movement towards all prisoners. They feel the respect to the anarchist prisoner. Okay? And also the immigrants, the mafia people, the different races inside the prison. When, for example, every New Year's Eve, all the anarchists, I mean, the active anarchists, you know, like about 3,000 people in Athens, like the core of the anarchist space. They make New Year's Eve in front of the big prison of Athens. The people, they go there, they gather every New Year's Eve, and they gather in front of the big prison of Athens, and they shout songs to the prisoners, and they sing the same songs with the prisoners inside and outside of the prison. Like to say to them, you are there for us, we are here for you. You know, and you can understand that, when this appears in the society, and the society understands that the anarchists, they fight for the elimination of prison, it is not something popular, because we don't try to water our ideas, you know, or to look ourselves positive or nice, or like a circus anyway. I mean, the anarchist movement is not like a circus. It's not like, we are very nice people or something. It is a movement that attacks to the common sense, attacks to the society, attacks to when the society, when we feel that the society is problematic in some points, like this girl was saying before, we attack to these problems with our own truth. We don't try to look interesting or to look nice, you know. But when our people going inside the prison, they feel this, they know this. So our prisoners, they have good life in prison. Yeah. And the respect of the prisoners.
Yeah, but also, of course, there are some people that they are afraid very much of prison, okay? And of course, there are many people that they are afraid to beat up very much by the police. But so that means that these people, they don't go like this, okay? But they are more behind, you know? But they are there, you know? Yes, they are still there, you know? They are not going to the front line, but they are still there. Or they can make something else, you know? The point is to think that except prison, there are many thousands of other things that you can do for the movement, as you say.
Yes, and it is not martyrologic, you know, our movement. Like, it is not like to create martyrs.
Yes,
you know,
or to sacrifice
for the movement or something, you know. It's not like this. If you are sure that you are winning, you do it.
You do,
if
yes.
you are not sure, you don't do.
Yes.
It's like this.
I have a hard time here because, with all the good intentions of anarchists, I can't quite trust that they're above some human nature, such as to feel a movement, you gotta feel resistance. But if you can't find resistance, you look for it. I wonder if the checkpoints that were made by the government on transportation and education and law, if maybe those checkpoints, some anarchists want to butt up against it and feel the in group, feel the out group, and say, oh yeah, a cop gets killed and people applaud. Everybody in the room applauds, so cop getting killed. Are we actually seeking to have an out group here, or do we really work on creating utopia?
If we build utopia, we don't build utopia. It's not alternativism. We don't accept alternativism. Like, no, because, you know, the people there in Greece, maybe me, I like a little bit alternativism, you know, I'm a little bit dropout person. But, okay, but the people in Greece, they work there, they have normal jobs, they fight inside their workplaces, they participate in the unions, not like side members, you know, but they go to the assemblies and they fight with the communists, they have confrontations, you know, they participate in their works, they don't do like it is not like escapism. And when we say like participation in the public life, we say that according to the way that we feel and the rage that we feel to the problems of our society and to the problems of our own history of life anyway, you know, this it is that that we do all the efforts through the counter-information and the attacks to bring like a civil war, you know, like to produce conditions of civil war. And also because some people they said like, how you can help the Greeks, the Greek movement, you know. The only way to help the Greek movement
to
it is to do a revolution here.
Yes, to revolt to the place of class.
Yes, because it is very important to understand. It is too many things. It is very important to understand that the Greek movement, it is culturally and historically situated, comes from our own ground of our existence. So as much rooted we are in our society, as much as we understand the problems of our society and the political content of this society, then this is the revolutionary way, according to the Greek way anyway. So in this way, I mean, we don't need like a
help.
It is the only thing that we need, you know, like it is to feel the resonance from your own revolt, you know.
Here, you know,
to
here. Yeah, there are also comrades, yes, you know.
But there is the hope that we will meet in the bargains of the global civil war, you know.
And at the same time, lots of people said that just seeing the solidarity demos in other countries in which it's harder to struggle helped them a whole lot and brought them back to the streets even when they were already exhausted. So the things that people did do did help to keep it going. I'm going to be the anal retentive American now and say that we've exceeded our time limit. Please don't feed the wild animals. If you ask more questions, they will stick here for another hour. Keep answering.
Starts at 4 and it actually will start at 4:30.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.